In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. So glad you're joining us today. As every week, we help you get a little more intelligence on big government. If this is your first time joining us, or it's been a while since you've joined us, a special welcome to you. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the vaccines, especially what is not being discussed in the mainstream media. Now, we are not anti-vaccine any more than we're anti-science. In fact, I'm a trained scientist. We here at iSpy Radio love science, real science, not what's been posing as science lately, where data is manipulated and the supposed scientists knowingly use the falsified data to push an agenda. These aren't minor mistakes. They were done on purpose, and people died as a result of the actions the government took. People died because of the lies spread in the media and continue to be spread. You'll be banned or at least silenced on social media if you dare to talk about hydroxychloroquine or proven alternative medicines. All must bow before the mighty vaccine. Well, today we're going to be discussing the vaccine and the realities of it, the adverse effects that are documented fact, not rumor, fact. If you haven't taken the vaccine, should you? If you have, are you in danger? What should you be doing to protect yourself? We'll also be talking with Chuck Weiss, another trained scientist, about what used to be considered conspiracy theories, which are suddenly being proven true. I'd like to welcome now Dr. Peter McCullough. He's an internist, cardiologist, and academic physician, professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine. Dr. McCullough, it is great to talk to you today.
Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we want to have you on because there are just so many questions that people are having about the vaccines, especially as more information comes out about them. And unfortunately, the normal sources of information appear to be compromised, government and media and even healthcare industry itself, and giving distorted or even politically motivated information instead of objective science-based information. And we hope that you could clear up some of the questions that we and our audience have. Before we get to those, though, tell our audience a bit about yourself and how your professional situation gives you a position of strength and puts you above the fray, really.
Well, as you introduced, I'm a professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine in the Baylor Dallas campus, and I'm an internist, a cardiologist. I'm a trained epidemiologist. I have a degree in epidemiology from the University of Michigan, and I'm the editor of two major journals, Cardiorenal Medicine, as well as Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine. I'm also the senior associate editor of the American Journal of Cardiology that's officed here at Baylor. I have been very focused on COVID-19 now since it started, and as an internist and a general medical doctor, I have really gone after it in terms of coming up with ways of how to treat COVID-19 and prevent hospitalizations of death. I've been a regular contributor in The Hill throughout 2020, basically forecasting for Americans exactly what was going to happen ahead of time, anticipating this entire situation that's developed with the COVID-19 vaccine. I've been a regular contributor on Fox News, Ingram, Engel, and had a window really to America. So I've had COVID-19 myself. My family members have had it. I've had a death in my family due to COVID-19. Mm. I take it seriously. And I can tell you, I think I probably am, out of anybody you're going to talk to, probably more supremely qualified to interpret the data and to fairly present my opinions with respect to what's going on. And I have no conflicts of interest. I have no financial ties to any stakeholders that are at work here in the COVID-19 pandemic.
Well, and that's very different from a lot of people that have been commenting on this. In an interview posted on Rumble.com, I think it was about a month or so ago, you said, quote, I think this whole pandemic from the beginning was about the vaccine. At what point did you come to that conclusion and what led you to it?
Well, Americans may wonder, what's been going on here? We have an illness where patients get sick at home for 2 weeks, and some people at higher risk over age 50 medical problems end up in the hospital and can either die in the hospital or survive and get discharged home. But they may wonder, why in the world is no one talking about treating COVID-19? Why has nobody actually tried to treat COVID-19? Why is the CDC, NIH, and FDA completely silent on treatment of COVID-19? Even with FDA-approved EUA antibodies, monoclonal antibodies, why do we hear no word about these antibodies? Mm-hmm. Why is there no 1-800 number for outpatient research? I mean, Americans are wondering, what in the world is going on? Why are they being told since April to wear a mask, stay in lockdown, and then wait for a vaccine? So it seems to me, if our public health officials, major medical centers, doctors, clinics, have shown no interest in treating COVID-19 to prevent hospitalization and death, it does appear as if all roads lead to a vaccine. Unfortunately, a vaccine is not a treatment.
No. As for the origins of COVID-19, do you believe that this was engineered? That's kind of the big thing going around right now. And if so, was it released on purpose or was it just an accident?
About a year ago, it was Wikipedia level knowledge that the Wuhan Institute for Virology in China was actually the National Virology Institute. Wikipedia level knowledge said it was receiving funding from the Chinese military. We learned later on that there was some U.S. Going through the National Institutes of Health allowed also some intellectual property exchange with respect to virology development. But every piece of information suggests that the coronavirus was being modified to become a supervirus, become more infectious and more deadly. With only one intent, there was no beneficial intent that we can see, one would conclude that it was indeed bioterrorism research. In fact, the spike on the ball of the virus is actually the target of research. That's called the Wuhan spike protein. It was made to be a super protein that caused the virus to be far more contagious and deadly.
So, but do you think it was released on purpose or do you think it was just an accident?
It's so hard to know. To release it on purpose and then injure and kill some of the local citizens, it's hard to believe that anybody could be that diabolical. Now, could a test tube have broken? Someone got it, went to a fish market, it spread around that way. Even the original paper from published in Lancet regarding the fish market, about a third of individuals never had gone to that fish market. In fact, they must have caught it somewhere else. About two thirds were at the fish market. So if I was to put things together, I'm not an expert on this, others are, I would say probably a test tube broke, someone got sick in the lab, that person was affected, then it was off from there.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back, we'll have more on the vaccines with Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the nation's top experts on COVID-19. And welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the nation's top experts on COVID-19. You know, we were talking in that last segment about its origins at the Wuhan lab and its escape from it. And whether it was on purpose or not, the response to COVID-19 has really been unprecedented, especially given that the virus itself is dangerous for sure, but it's not necessarily an automatic death sentence, especially if it's treated early and that you don't have other underlying conditions. It's not like polio or smallpox that killed about 30 to 40% of people who got infected. And yet there has been this frantic push and all of this marketing to get everyone vaccinated, despite the vaccine itself is no guarantee against getting COVID or stopping you from spreading it if you should get it after being vaccinated. So why are they pushing the vaccine like the fate of mankind depends on it, despite a survivability rate of about 99.5%?
Nothing adds up here. Why did they proposed no treatment? Why did they, in a sense, suppress treatment by killing the only NIH trial of outpatient treatment? They killed, it was a 2,000-patient trial in May, and they killed it after 20 patients in June. Why was there all this confused messaging regarding hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, steroids, colchicine, aspirin? Why is there no mention of the monoclonal antibodies? There almost appears to be an intentional suppression of treatment.
Yes.
In order to promote the vaccine. I mean, one can only conclude that. Why wouldn't we care about treating sick people today? We know that only 1% of Americans actually got COVID-19. We know at any given time, far less than 1% of people ever have COVID-19. So we could zero in on, let's say, 25,000 sick Americans per day and focus on treating them to reduce hospitalization and death. And by doing that, we reduce the spread. And in my view, that should be the primary way that we handle the problem. Instead, what we've done is we've suggested, instead of focusing on 25,000 people, we focused on 330 million people, subjecting them to lockdowns, masks, endless ordinances, other things. And now this relentless push for the vaccine. So the vaccine, as you implied, it's not 100% protective. And everything that we can see about it is that it is a vaccine that has tremendous concerns over safety. In fact, it almost certainly will be recorded in history as the vaccine that has created the most safety concerns in the history of vaccination.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but you're no longer recommending the vaccine for patients. Is that correct? And if so, why?
I just finished with patients today. I'm still at the hospital. And I can tell you, coming out of the clinical trials, the Pfizer and Moderna, and then later on the J&J, the vaccines were studied over a short period of time, about 2 months. The rates of developing COVID, whether someone got placebo or the real vaccine, was less than 1%. So they were testing the vaccine in people who were not getting exposed to COVID, but the rates were still below 1%. They looked favorable. And while the vaccine had about vaccine reactions in the arm in about 80% of people, it looked reasonable to offer this to individuals in the general public. And that was done through the CDC mass vaccination offering. So it was elective. Patients would ask me, December, January, February, I'd say, well, yeah, go ahead and get the vaccine if you feel comfortable doing that. But it's purely elective. Doctors really don't have any role in either recommending or not recommending it because it's not fully FDA approved. And so about 70% of my patients have been vaccinated. But as the safety data came out, every week there were more and more deaths, hospitalizations, urgent care visits, office visits, severe reactions. These were certified by the CDC. So when one of these safety reports comes in, it's we know over 80% of the time they're filled out by doctors or healthcare personnel. It takes about 30 minutes to fill out one of these forms. A lot of detailed information about who's reporting this, which doctor. I just did one of these today, so I can tell you I personally did it. I know what it takes. And so these are real reports. These are real reports. And the previous published studies suggest they're underreported by about tenfold. Yes. But as these numbers came in, we passed a threshold by which any reasonable doctor would say, listen, enough's enough. It's just these are not sufficiently safe to generally recommend.
Hmm. So if you could address some of the rumors and concerns that are out there, one of the suppositions about the vaccine is that it could lead to depopulation. And this is coming from several angles, one being that Bill Gates' involvement and others who are known very much for wanting to lower the population. Other sources of this are from within the medical fields who have said that the vaccine could lead to infertility and is impacting things like menstrual periods, could interfere with placenta development and may damage the ovaries. Could you address the concerns about depopulation? Do you see anything about the vaccines that support those fears?
Well, sure. America's on edge as well as the rest of the world because of Bill Gates and his relationship to Gavi, the World Health Organization, the CDC, the NIH, the WHO, US FDA, and major academic medical centers. People are concerned because he has pre-announced publicly, and it's in many different media venues, this idea of reducing the world's population through mass vaccination. So it would be natural that if the Gates Foundation is involved, that this is a concern. Now, as things have rolled along, we know that the Moderna application to the European Medical Agency, EMA, showed a reduction in fertility in laboratory animals with the Moderna vaccine over the short term. Now, the reduction was about a 16% reduction. The threshold for not letting it go forward was 25%. But there's a concern that as things were rushed, we know the vaccines were not studied for their impact on teratogenicity or birth defects. We know that the vaccines were not tested on what's called genotoxicity. There's a whole bunch of steps that vaccines have to go through in testing, and all those steps were skipped. Then we learned from the Japanese regulatory authorities that they asked Pfizer to do a biodistribution study of the lipid particle that contains the messenger RNA for the Pfizer vaccine. And what we learned there is that it does distribute throughout the body in these animals, and that while it washed out of the other organs, the lipid particles did. We learned that the particles did seem to concentrate in the ovaries and seemed to accelerate their concentration about tenfold over 48 hours. And it was just a striking signal to see all the lines go down except for the ovaries and have it go up. We've heard many, many reports of menstrual irregularities in women. And so I think everybody has heard this. And there's great concern that in the clinical trials, the vaccine manufacturers and the FDA strictly excluded pregnant women, women of childbearing age who couldn't guarantee contraception. And so now what's happened is our CDC has, in a sense, kind of promoted vaccination in these excluded groups. So if the FDA and the manufacturers thought it wasn't safe to vaccinate them, we're greatly concerned that the CDC and employers and many others are promoting vaccination. Yes. We just never do that in we don't do that in medical care. We've never done it.
You mentioned the biodistribution study, and that was going to be my next question, actually. This showed that some of the nanoparticles have accumulated in a number of organs, most notably the liver, the spleen, the kidney, and even high concentrations in the ovaries, as you said. Is that normal for vaccines to do that, and can it cause damage?
I am not an expert in these biodistribution studies, but I think the expected response is that, you know, any product that's injected and it circulates around, the expectation is that it would wash out of organs equally. If it was like an immune active substance, one would expect accumulation in lymph nodes in the spleen. If it was a hormone directed therapy, for instance, if it involved estrogen receptors or gonadotropin receptors, that we would expect that it accumulates in the ovaries. But there's no reason why a COVID-19 vaccine ought to accumulate in the ovaries. It just doesn't make sense.
And could it cause damage?
Well, we know that what happens when the lipid particles containing the messenger RNA go to cells, the cells take that messenger RNA and they start producing the spike protein. That's the product of this bioterrorism research. So in a sense, the vaccine is tricking the body into making a protein, and the protein is the product of bioterrorism. So the vaccine is giving people a dose of bioterrorism, in a sense, in order to get the body to develop an immunity to it. So as the spike protein is generated in these cells and local tissues, we know for sure that it's directly damaging to cells and it's directly damaging to blood vessels adjacent to cells. And we also know very clearly that it causes blood clotting. There's no doubt about it. There was blood clotting seen in the natural COVID infection, and there's been tremendous rates of blood clots seen in all the vaccines, the Pfizer, yes, Moderna, and J&J. So if you put all this together, is it good that it concentrates in the ovaries? It can't be. Could it be bad if the spike protein is starting to be generated there in the ovaries? Almost certainly it's a bad thing.
Wow, that is just really quite worrisome. Okay, we do need to take a break. We'll be back with Dr. Peter McCullough discussing the vaccines and what's not being discussed in the mainstream media.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.
We're talking today with Dr. Peter McCullough, an internist, cardiologist, and professor of medicine at Texas A&M, and one of the nation's top experts on COVID and the vaccines. So, Doctor, you had mentioned blood clots, and another concern out there is that vaccine particles could cross the blood-brain barrier and lead to conditions like Alzheimer's or other degenerative diseases. Regardless, I mean, if you're getting blood clots in the brain, I don't see that as a really good thing.
Well, indeed, blood clots have been found in the brain with all the products. There was a great focus on the J&J product in the United States and the AstraZeneca product outside the United States, because the adenoviral vector itself can actually cause blood clotting. But as we zero in on this, the vast majority of severe safety reports that have come in across all categories in the United States are with Pfizer and Moderna, and there's far fewer with J&J. So I've always had a thought that the one injection with J&J, if one was forced to have a vaccine or really felt compelled, that one could get in and out of that more safely than the messenger RNA vaccines. And Americans are really disturbed, because the National Institutes of Health one of our trusted government agencies co-owns the patent with Moderna.
Yes.
So they're a stakeholder. So the CDC, NIH, and FDA together with Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J, they're all stakeholders. So we don't have any fair objective steering committee or executive committee. We don't have any fair critical event committee, data safety monitoring board, or human ethics committee. These are the fundamental structures of a large-scale clinical trial. All the safety mechanisms that we normally have in drug or vaccine research are missing in this wide open mass vaccination program. It's very disturbing.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So if these do cross the blood-brain barrier, the blood-brain barrier, could that lead to things like Alzheimer's? Because that's another concern that's being expressed right now.
I think it's all conjecture. People have speculated if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, either the messenger RNA or the adenoviral DNA crosses the blood-brain barrier, or if the spike protein is locally made in the brain, that we could be off to the races with respect to neurodegenerative problems, headaches, other direct neurologic complaints, or even at worst, the development of prion disease or Alzheimer's. It's all speculation. All I can tell you is that there are a significant number of safety reports that are neurologic, including loss of vision, paralysis, other general syndromes. Headache is a frequent one. That's one today I saw in the office of intractable headache since the vaccine. Another one is memory loss. That's another one that was seen today that has to be entered. These are racking up at unprecedented numbers in the safety system. I mean, right now, I'm looking at the data through May 28th, 2021, and we're at 294,801 safety reports. Every single one was made by a doctor or a nurse, the vast majority, and they actually are certified by the CDC. So the CDC goes back and says, okay, yeah, they were hospitalized, and this is a legitimate clinic, and this doctor is. And each one of these forms are filled out. It says on the bottom, it says, warning, falsification of these records are punishable by fines or federal imprisonment. So I'm telling you, these are legitimate, 294,801. Let me give you an idea. For the serious safety events, including hospitalizations, death, office visits, an entire year of with a single large-scale vaccine like the flu vaccine, we should have less than 200. And so to look at this, I'll read you the data, and the public needs to hear this. 5,165 deaths. 17,619 hospitalizations, 39,121 urgent care visits, 51,153 office visits, 1,342 severe allergic reactions, anaphylaxis, 1,565 Bell's palsy, where the face is paralyzed half on one side. And these are certified by the CDC. These are unprecedented. I mean, I can tell you, for the meningococcal vaccine, something like this would be less than 200, flu shot less than 200, certainly with respect to mortality. So there are calls right now. I mean, today, a very respected analytic group in the UK, headed up by Dr. Tess Lowry, today presented an analysis similar to what I've just done, an unbiased analysis. Again, we have no stake in this at all. She presented it to the MRHA in England, and her conclusion was that the vaccines are unsafe for human use. Shut it down. In another paper by Bruno et al. That's been submitted and widely circulated, 57 authors, 17 different countries that have basically said, listen, if safety cannot be improved or we can't find where the problem is here, shut down the program.
Wow. Do you think that we're going to be seeing a storm of autoimmune disease in the future as a result of these vaccines?
I simply don't know. I mean, we don't have any data beyond 2 months. And now that it's this been explosion of all these adverse safety reports, you know, the deaths we can't get back. The deaths occur. We know that about 40% occur on days 1, 2, and 3. And it looks like it's an immediate thing. They either die in the vaccine center or they die a few days later of fever, chills, nausea, vomiting, difficulty breathing, and then death at home. And then there's a whole trail out to about 2 weeks of these blood clot related events, blood clots that go to the lungs or the brain causing stroke, blood clots related to heart attacks. We know that the spike protein itself circulates to the heart and can cause what's called myocarditis or inflammation of the heart itself. And in fact, these reports come up every day. So I'm looking at one today that came out in CNBC. The headline is CDC says heart inflammation cases were higher than expected in 16 to 24-year-olds after the second COVID vaccine shot. These have been reported in Israel, France, and elsewhere. I mean, honestly, this is the type of thing, if we're going to put out a vaccine for wide use, it better be safe, 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 safe.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll wrap things up with Dr. Peter McCullough talking about the dangers of the vaccines after this. And welcome back. This is the I Spy Radio Show, and we're talking today about the vaccines and some of the dangers with them. Why they haven't been pulled is a real mystery, in my opinion. We're talking with Dr. Peter McCullough, an internist, cardiologist, and professor of medicine at Texas A&M, and one of the nation's leading experts on COVID. Dr. McCullough, in a previous interview, you had said that the vaccines all have a narrow target, that all of them are essentially geared towards the original Wuhan flu, and that people are getting vaccinated for something that doesn't even exist anymore, and that the vaccines represent a very narrow field of immunity compared to the natural immunity for somebody who successfully fought off COVID. So do people who have been vaccinated, do they need to take extra precautions, particularly if they catch COVID again?
Well, the vaccine manufacturers have all alluded to the fact that the immunity is too narrow. So they're already prepping the public for boosters in the fall. So they've already kind of tipped their hat that the immunity is not very solid. The other thing that the FDA has indicated is that people who receive the vaccine can't donate plasma to treat COVID-19. So the FDA has kind of already told Americans, listen, it's not very good antibodies because you can't even use it. It's not nearly as good as the natural immune antibodies. So that's actually what the manufacturers and the FDA has told you. So I would take it at face value that they don't think it's too good. What we know scientifically is that the library of antibodies generated against the Wuhan spike protein is potentially 50 or so antibodies. They are narrow because they only address the spike protein. The natural infection, we address the whole ball of the virus, the nucleocapsid. Natural infection, we have robust T cell immunity, about 1,400 different changes happen in T cells. So we know the natural immunity is perfect. One never gets the infection again. With the narrow immunity against the Wuhan spike protein, where the antibody levels are very high. In fact, they're higher than the natural infection, but just for the spike protein. And so far, the reported data suggest that it does cover other variants, because the variants all have mutations in the spike protein. And there's slight changes that the antibodies made from the vaccine are still good enough to cover it. However, it can't be perfect because the CDC, by May 31st, had already reported over 10,000 bona fide breakthrough cases where they carefully made sure the patients were vaccinated people. Now, it was very hard to get those data because they came in through different reporting systems through the community health. So we don't know what the denominator was, but it was so large. We do know that the CDC gave up on tracking it. So Americans should be concerned that the vaccines don't work, or they don't work well enough, and the CDC anticipates it's going to be overwhelmed. So we gave up.
Yeah, or could lead to other issues. And speaking of that, we've talked about some of the adverse reactions and particle accumulation in organs and whatnot. For people who've been vaccinated, are there long-term effects from these vaccines that they need to be concerned about, or do we just simply not know? Or are there symptoms or other warning signs that they should be on the lookout for?
You know, we simply don't know. And I think good medical care and follow-up is reasonable. So patients should have, you know, their annual laboratories and annual physical exam. We simply don't know. We know a few things have been impacted. So, for instance, we know in women that the changes in the arm and the breast are so significant that the radiologists have to adjust how they read mammograms. And some have suggested, you know, give some time before a woman has a mammogram after the vaccine. So if a woman is, you know, at risk for breast cancer or in the middle of some type of follow-up or a breast lump or what have you, would not be a good time to get the vaccine. But we should make some comments about, you know, where was the vaccine best utilized? I would say in the highest risk seniors and in nursing home workers. I think that probably in my view, should have been the limit to the vaccine. We could have, I think we may have about 2 to 3 million seniors in senior facilities. We may have another couple million workers. I think we could have vaccinated potentially 20 million people tops and limited the safety exposure and protected the population, because we know the vaccine has a less than 1% impact. I told you that patients with the vaccine have a way less than 1% chance in general of ever getting COVID. And if they get COVID, we know the vaccine is only partially effective. So the vaccine's not going to handle the global COVID problem. It can't. It can't mathematically handle it. You can think of it like an insurance policy. You get an insurance policy on your house. Now, chances are your house isn't going to, you know, be flooded this year. But if you're flooded, you're covered. But it's a pretty low chance. And the same thing here. The people who got vaccinated were people who, A, didn't previously have COVID, and they were being good, hunkering down, home office, etc. And then the other people who got vaccinated, which was really unfortunate, is people who had prior COVID. They were told to get a vaccine, and they didn't need it because they were 100% immune. So this recent study reviewed from the Cleveland Clinic of healthcare workers, it turned out half the healthcare workers who took the vaccine already had COVID. So it was a complete waste of a vaccine. So the vaccine's going to look pretty good in the data in showing people can't get COVID, but a lot of it's because they're already immune to begin with before they even took the vaccine.
Right, right. I know you need to get going. Do you have time for one more quick question?
Sure.
Okay. Why did they use, in the first place, why did they decide to use mRNA to trick our own cells into creating the spike proteins? Why not simply use weakened viruses as we've done successfully with vaccines for going on some 200 years?
Well, for this form of coronavirus, the weakened viruses haven't worked. It's been tried in the past and they didn't work. The messenger RNA technology was kind of on the shelf. It had previously failed for other viruses. It was being looked at to actually manage chronic diseases. And one of the concerns is that the messenger RNA platform may stay in the body and probably does by design for a very long time. I don't think it's digested or cleared away very quickly at all. And so it was being designed to treat chronic diseases like neurodegenerative diseases, malignancies, you know, with periodic shots. So it wasn't really on the shelf ready to go for a vaccine, but it was plugged in because the code of the spike protein was known. And the reason why the code was known is because it was developed in a bioterrorism lab. That's how the whole genetic code was known so quickly. It was already on the shelf. In fact, it looks like National Institutes of Health funding was being used.
Yes.
And maybe even U.S. intellect was being used to actually create the code for the spike protein. So we had the code ready and it could be plugged into messenger RNA. In fact, there are some reports indicating that Pfizer and others actually had the code, the patents already written on the code. So they were ready to go. We know the NIH co-owns the patent for Moderna. How do you put that together in a matter of a few months?
Yeah, exactly.
So people are suspicious that something is up here that just doesn't sound right.
No, it sure doesn't. And unfortunately, that would open a whole other can of worms. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been great.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is the iSpy Radio Show.
I'd like to welcome Chuck Weiss back to the show. We always enjoy having good thinkers on iSpy Radio, and Chuck is a great thinker. He's a meteorologist, trained scientist, and fierce debunker of junk science, especially when it comes to things like bad data. And we really like to have him on when what he has said on previous shows turns out to be exactly right. Chuck, welcome back.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Yeah, so regarding the origins of COVID and it being pretty much proven now that it was, in fact, bioengineered in a Wuhan lab, what's it like to be proven right and not a conspiracy theorist? Do you feel vindicated?
Well, yeah, I never really felt like nervous about saying all the things I had said about it before, because like a lot of other scientists, you just follow the data and you follow what other people have discovered about it. And it became pretty apparent early in the game that this thing was very likely bioengineered. It couldn't have been a naturally evolving virus. You know, natural selection doesn't operate the way it ended up doing with this particular virus, where suddenly there's this huge infection to the human population and no warning that there was a virus lurking around that had the potential to do this prior to that. And of course, after they looked at the virus, Mark, we found 23 different inserts, and one of them was HIV. That was a Harvard microbiologists that discovered that. And that was way back at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yes.
And there were people in the academic community that even then were like raising their eyebrows and saying, whoa, this thing does not look like something that would have evolved naturally through natural selection and had to go through repetitive cycles of trying to get into the human genome. I mean, viruses just don't operate that way. This thing came out supercharged and had a supercharged ability to spread rapidly and infect the human population. And you normally just don't see that.
No.
So all the warning signs were there. And then you just follow things from that point, and you come to those conclusions. I think the reason why we didn't see a lot of the people admitting this at the beginning is because the very person that ended up having to give bad information and data to President Donald Trump was Anthony Fauci. He's right in the middle of this thing, and he needs to come clean with the public and tell the truth about what he knows, when he knew it, and how involved with the Wuhan lab he actually was. Because so far, we've caught him in a string of lies about saying that he had nothing to do with this, when in fact the records now are beginning to show that he did.
Yes, and he knew from those emails that have been released, he knew early on that this was more than likely engineered. We'll come back to his emails. I think what remains to be seen, though, is whether or not it was in fact released on purpose. And personally, I think it was meant to be released, but I think it got out before they were truly ready. And some of what's being coming to light right now is the same lab that was working on engineering this was also working on a vaccine for it. I think they wanted the vaccine ready to go and likely inoculate their own people, or at least the ones that mattered in their opinion, and then release it on the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's very possible. I mean, all of the things that we keep learning about that are coming out slowly, coming out in the cracks around everything that's trying to hold us in secrecy, failing, we see more and more evidence that it was not only bioengineered. My personal opinion, just from what I've seen, is that I think this was bioengineered. It was a military weapon in the making. I don't think they'd actually perfected this yet. I think the Chinese were working on a way to make this far more deadly than it actually ended up being when it escaped from their lab. But the evidence that they knew all about it is there because, as you said, there's a Dr. Zhao. It was he was called the chief military scientist of military medicine of the People's Liberation Army of Communist China. This guy worked intimately in the Wuhan lab, and he filed for patent rights on the virus February 24th, 2020. Now, that was just when this pandemic was starting to get going. If it was true that this had a natural origin, it is scientifically impossible for this guy to understand enough about it to have a vaccine ready to go and to have filed patent rights about it. And then when the Chinese found out, well, this thing is spreading very rapidly around the world, and now we see it's killing a lot of people, they became extremely paranoid about jumping on this, saying, well, we got a vaccine for it. Suddenly, Dr. Zhao disappears, and he dies. And the Chinese do this to all the people to keep whatever dirty little secrets they've got in the communist Chinese house and not wanting to let them out. So Dr. Zhao disappears, and we find out later he's dead. But nobody knows how he died. Well, what does that tell you? It's like they were so paranoid once they found out how many people were dying from this, they couldn't risk another scientist opening his mouth and saying, hey, I've got the solution, a vaccine. Well, because they knew that early in the game for him to be saying that would destroy all of their claims that this had a natural origin.
Yep,
that would just
absolutely
blow it out of the water. So they had to keep it under wraps. And now we know this is what they did.
Yep, absolutely. And so all these revelations from Fauci's emails, you know, they're just proving us right. But just imagine what's in the emails they're still hiding.
Oh, my word. Yeah. I mean, and nothing surprises me anymore based upon what's come out about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm even more concerned about our own vaccines that we've developed from this. I've got some very serious concerns about them. And personally, I'm not going to take this vaccine. I just don't believe that it's safe. And there's all kinds of things in the record that prove that it's not. And yet what concerns me is they're going ahead with it full blast. You see these absurd lottery ticket offers, buy somebody a beer or a hamburger. Come on and get the jab. Get a hamburger, get a beer. I mean, I've just never seen such reprehensible behavior by a medical community pushing this on people.
It absolutely makes no sense why they are pushing that. All right, let's go and take a break. We were right about another COVID conspiracy theory. We'll talk about that next with Chuck Weiss. And welcome back in our final segment now on the Iceberg Radio Show. We're talking with Chuck Weiss, a meteorologist, trained scientist, and fierce debunker of junk science. And Chuck, another conspiracy theory that has been proven to be correct is one that we've discussed previously. Hydroxychloroquine really did work and really was effective fighting COVID-19. It was initially given emergency authorization by the FDA back in March of 2020, 10 days after Trump had first mentioned it. And then a month later, they warned it could be causing some heart problems. Few weeks after that, the infamous Lancet article condemned it, and it was pulled. You just couldn't get it, including right here in Oregon. But just this week, the infamous Lancet article that was used as the reason to stop treating COVID patients with HCQ, and which launched 1,000 attacks against Trump, that article has been pulled. It was retracted because the observational data set used to create the study could not be properly audited. So once again, we're back to bad data used to manipulate the masses and scaremonger people into submission. What are your thoughts?
Exactly that, Mark. That's exactly what they did with this drug. It's just astonishing that way back at the beginning of the pandemic, you had frontline physicians. These are the doctors that are out there working with patients, trying to get the effects of this virus under control. And like so many people at the beginning of it, we had no idea what we were dealing with when this virus first hit. Mm-hmm. Everybody was scared, and for good reason, because it can kill you. And it was killing people. But the doctors who were involved in treating it realized that one of the main symptoms that causes death is severe inflammation of the lungs, where it stops your ability to get adequate oxygen into your system to live. And they knew that this was an inflammatory response of some kind caused by the virus. And so they started looking at drugs that are anti-inflammatories, one of which was hydroxychloroquine. Because it's been on the market for 60 years, it's safe, it's FDA approved, it was used for lupus, it's used to treat malaria, all sorts of inflammatory conditions, including rheumatoid arthritis. So they tried this along with some antibiotics and zinc, because there was some sort of a combination there that they thought might be effective in stopping viral replication. And it was a Dr. Zelenko from New York State that was the first physician that I know of in the United States who had tried this on his patients and had read good results out of France, where there were some people over there, a doctor over there that was using it as well, having remarkable success in treating the patients, getting the cytokine storms to stop in the lungs, and reversing a lot of this damage that can end up getting you on a ventilator. Mm-hmm. And so they reported all of this, and there were also frontline doctors like Dr. Simone Gold and several others who followed this protocol and were having success in treating their patients.
And they were just absolutely attacked. Yep, they were just attacked.
And then President Trump talked about it, and President Trump was basically just reciting the success these frontline physicians were having with it, saying, hey, this has got some promising results to it. And they gave an emergency use authorization for the drug. And as soon as Trump started talking about it, and as soon as these doctors started saying what a successful treatment protocol this was they had developed, no sooner did they do that than Rick Bright from the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority at the FDA all of a sudden decides, well, you know what? We think there's a real problem with this. And they made up a bunch of lies about it and said that it doesn't work. And they used these flawed studies to do it. The results from the flawed studies were just that. They were flawed and they were inaccurate, and they didn't follow the protocols the frontline physicians were using to successfully treat this with. And the cascade that resulted from his pulling the emergency use authorization caused pharmaceutical companies and pharmacies all across the country to actually block the prescription ability of your own doctor from getting you this drug if you needed it to treat the virus with.
Right.
It was outrageous.
It was absolutely outrageous, because it has since been proven that 85% of the deaths that happened as a result of COVID-19 could have been prevented had they been put on HCQ. And plus, the irony here is they pulled HCQ when early on when we should have been trying an all of the above approach, but they pulled that when it might have been harming people. But yet we've got thousands of people that are being impacted and harmed by COVID vaccines, including resulting in deaths from these vaccines, and nothing's being done to pull those vaccines.
No, absolutely. You know, when they did the flu vaccine for H1N1 flu, when that first came out, or it wasn't H1N1, it was the swine flu epidemic. I think that was back in the early 90s. The FDA and scientists in the pharmaceutical industry developed a vaccine for that. And it turns out it wasn't a good idea, because when they started administering the vaccine, when they reached the first 50 deaths caused by this vaccine that they could affirmatively tie to it, they pulled it off the market.
Yes, they did.
And as of today, Mark, if you go to the VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, there's over 4,000, and they're behind in gathering the data about this, but so far there's over 4,000 adverse reactions from this, over 4,000, and several deaths. So this is many times over, even with an incomplete data set, of what they used as criteria to pull the swine flu vaccine, back in the 90s or late 80s. And so you've got many, many times the injuries, and yet they're ignoring it, saying, well, the risk of getting sick, the risk of adverse events outweighs the risk of getting sick. That's nonsense. That is completely false, because we know these other drugs like hydroxychloroquine, budesonide, dexamethasone, ivermectin. There's all kinds of new drugs that they're not new. They've been around for a long time, but they're being tried by the frontline physicians with success to treat this virus so that it's not lethal. And that's the key to the whole thing.
Yes.
And they were
cheap and inexpensive.
Exactly. And yet, in spite of all this knowledge, these people now are still saying, well, the vaccine, you've got to take it. They're telling us that the vaccine is the only hope and salvation of treating this disease. And that's complete nonsense. It's a lie. It's not true. And these vaccine injuries are something that they ought to be very concerned about. And they're acting today, all of our health authorities, like, well, it's no big deal. The risks are very small. These are safe and effective vaccines. And the fact of the matter is, they don't even know if they're effective. They claim that they
are. Because the trials are still ongoing. And in fact, there are over 5,000 deaths right now. But unfortunately, we are up against the clock. Chuck, I want to thank you so much. I'm sure this won't be the last time that you are correct about something. So we'll have to have you back.
Okay, Mark, good to be here.
Here's another fun COVID fact. According to Bloomberg News, sales of plexiglass tripled to roughly $750 million during the pandemic, except there was one little hitch. Not one single study has shown that plastic barriers actually did anything to control the virus. At any rate, do be sure to check out today's show page on iSpyRadio.com for more links and information about these topics. That's the letter I, iSpyRadio.com. We put those up there so that you can share them. People need good information, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.